Wonderful, wonderful. So the recording has now started, and we are on call number 4 for day number 2 of the Monetize Your Gifts Masterclass. I am honored to bring to you Ms. Terry Belfer. Terry and I actually connected via Facebook. She is a colleague of the amazing Barbara Winter, who was on the first session yesterday. And if you haven't heard or you haven't had a chance to hear Barbara, you really should give yourself that treat because she's wonderful. Terry is an amazing creative entrepreneur herself and artist, and has a very rich history and a lot of information to share. And the thing that in particular that really drew me to Terry, well, Terry actually reached out to me and she interviewed me. Actually, about a month ago, which was fun to do because I've always been on this side of the phone, so it's nice to be on the other end. But Terry really has a very strong knack and ability for being able to see where creative people can actually earn money for themselves beyond just some of the sites like Etsy and Artfire. I mean, she actually goes beyond that and can really give us some practical strategies that we can use to really start ramping up our income greatly. So if you have a craft-related business or art-related business, and I would think probably, any type of just business in general that you want to diversify your income and increase your resources, I'm sure she's going to give you some great information. So first of all, say, Terry, welcome, and thank you for being a part of the masterclass today.
Well, hi, Rodney, and I'm so excited to be part of your masterclass. Thank you for inviting me, and it's kind of fun to switch roles this time. And I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to share these tips with your listeners. And you're correct, Rodney, that most of these tips can apply to many things in addition to crafts. When I mention crafts, I'm also talking about any handmade objects. They could be candles, jewelry, textile wearables, home decor, fine art, photography, edible treats like cakes or jellies or sauces, and even body care products like soaps or lotions. So, yes, absolutely, any kind of creative work that someone does, they can turn into a career, a very lucrative career.
Wonderful. You know, Terry, you've been at this game for a long time. I mean, you've done a lot. You know, could you just share a little bit of your story, your history, and sort of how you got started, as a creative entrepreneur, artist, and then growing your business over the years?
Yes, I absolutely will. It's long because I am a somewhat of a serial entrepreneur. Basically, after college, I was a fine art education major, and, I just knew during student teaching I was not going to fit in the public school system at the time. This was the 70s, and I just knew I'd be fired or quit within the first week. That just wasn't for me. So I went to work for a company handling their advertising, and when I realized the percentage that the agencies got, I walked in and said, hey, let's start a house agency. And the answer I got back was, well, you do it. So I had no help, just basically started my first business on a dare with no money, realizing that the agency commission of 15% was more than my salary. And that really wasn't a good fit for me. It was successful, but I just didn't feel like I was really meeting my creative needs. Also started a home furnishings company with very little money, bought a truck of furniture with a partner, and we grew a $12,000 investment into a $25 million annual business. And, again, just didn't feel right about it. Drove a friend to massage therapy school to check it out for her, and I went, oh, this is fun. I'm going to do this. So went through the programs, became certified, and started a body care business. And then wanted to move from Southern Cal to Northern Cal, just like you, Rodney, and fell in love with this little coastal village and had no clue what I was going to do there, but I decided, hey, get back to my art, open an art gallery. And I didn't want to invest a lot of money, and I didn't. I started it on very little, was very successful with it, and sold that as well, and it is still going successfully with a new owner and many, many people, artists along the way that I worked with, and since then have just asked me to help them start their own creative business. So it's been a really fun journey, and I'm sure this won't be my last creative gig.
Well, you know, you echo so much of what, you know, Carol and I just wrapped up speaking about, which is diversification and having your finger in many different pots. But what you've done and what I'm seeing already, just based on what you've already shared with us, is that everything that you've done is a progression. It's all, and nothing is wasted. And every single piece that you've done leads into the next thing that you do. I know some creatives, and I want to just stay with that for just a second here, you know, they feel that, you know, well, if this job isn't directly related to me making money from my art, it's maybe, it's not really serving me. You know, you mentioned earlier that you were involved in advertising, and you even was involved with teaching, but ironically, you're back into teaching again, but in a different form. Could you share a little bit about our, you know, past experiences and how we can use them in our current reincarnations of ourselves?
Absolutely. I think a good example is that I've been on both or several ends of the creative business. I did also when I was young in my 20s. I was an artist selling to craft fairs for a while, and so when artists then came to me, when I had my gallery and artists approached me to be in the gallery, I was able to see it not only from a retailer standpoint, but from the view of a previous artist out there pounding the pavement at craft fairs, trying to get into shops and galleries. So I think everything we've done in the past builds on the next thing. And as you know, Rodney, the notion of the starving artist is just simply a myth. It's just not true that you can't make a substantial living with your creative pursuits. And one thing that I really want to stress with this phone call is that if you want to just bring in some extra cash, if you're in a different business or job and you have a hobby and you want to just bring in some extra cash, you can do any one of these tips. Now, I hope I'm going to have time to give you at least 12 of the many, many I have. You can do one of them and bring in an extra $1,200 a month, but you can also, if you're ready to turn your creative pursuit into a full-time business, you can do all of them and bring in a really nice six-figure income. I mean, 12 tips times $1,200 a piece is $14,400, which is like, what, $188,000 a year, which is nothing to sneeze at. And people go, wow, how could I do that as an artist? But you know, you can. You just have to work at it. And one reason that I say beyond Etsy is that a lot of creative people will put their creative products up on a site like Etsy or Artfire and then walk away. And even though I personally make my living supporting artists, I spend very little time on those mega sites because I get overwhelmed. And I know that a lot of busy entrepreneurs who have the money to spend buying handmade items and art feel the same way I do. They just don't have time to spend, surfing mega sites. And most of us, there are books out there that, you know, that talk about ways to sell your art at craft shows and wholesaling to shops and consigning to galleries. But those are all great ways, but there are already people out there telling you how to do that. And I'm going to give you tips on many additional ways to do it so that you can actually put together what I call a portfolio of profit.
I'm all about that, the portfolio of income streams. I like profits too.
Absolutely.
So I love those too. So what we want to do is I really want to make sure that we get all of those 12 points in, and so we're about maybe 13 minutes into our call. So what I'd love everyone to do is to get out that intention guide. If you had a chance to print that out, or if that's not handy for you, get out a pad and pen, because Terry's going to go, pretty quickly, not so much that you won't be able to hear what she's saying, but I want you to get that down. So this is the time to get into action and start making your plan. So, Terry, you have the floor. What are these 12 easy ways that we can generate that extra, what did you say, $188,000 a year?
Well, yeah, if you do all of them. Each one of these are, every one of these I've either tried myself or recommended to friends and clients, and every one of them has brought in an additional $1,000 to $1,500 a month. So, yeah, again, you can do, pieces of them and put together a really great income. So you stop me if I talk too fast because I get so excited about this.
No, I know you do. So, yeah, I think everyone's had enough time to get that pad and pen out. So let's go for it. Let's get into it. We're ready to rock and roll.
Okay. So there are a few things that are universally good marketing practices regardless of what your hobby or craft is. And the biggest thing, and Rodney, you and I have talked about this, is that you need to make sure that your work is not hiding out in your studio. Nobody's going to see it in your studio, of course, unless you have open houses. If you make wearable art, wear it everywhere, every day. And if you aren't somewhere that you're seen by a lot of people, for example, you do work at home in your studio, gift or loan your pieces to friends or family who work in busy offices and go to lots of functions where they're seen by the ideal buyer. And if you create fine art or photography or home decor items, give or loan some of your work to friends who have luncheons or dinner parties with the right guest lists. If you have friends or family who are junior leaguers or high-level corporate execs who entertain often, those are the people that you want to make sure either own or borrow your work. And you want to make sure that anyone who's in possession of your work knows your story, just like I just told you all my story. Always have plenty of printed material, your picture. Buyers love to be able to say they know the artist and to give their friends little personal tidbits about a piece that they're wearing or something that they purchased. So make sure people know your story and have your contact info. Ideally, you'll have some items that are one of a kind and others that you can duplicate, like prints, or if you make jewelry or metalwork, maybe casting, things that you can make once and sell over and over. It will help you appeal to a different population if you have a spread of price ranges and you have pieces that are scalable and that will enable you not only to constantly be trading hours for dollars. So if you're a bit hesitant to reproduce some of your work, consider doing limited editions. That really adds a perceived value, even if it's something that's produced a number of times. So I'm going to roll right into the tips. Tip number one would be virtual open house or virtual cooperative effort. So even if you are on Etsy or Artfire or other craft sites, this is something you'll want to do. Again, a lot of us are just overwhelmed by those sites. This suggestion works really well. Carefully choose some crafters whose work is complementary to yours and who would appeal to the same profile buyer. Maybe they're your online friends. And invite them to gather together for a virtual open house. So what that means is you set up a simple website, you can just even do a free WordPress site, that features each artist's bio and their work for sale. And you know, ideally, hopefully, you've already been keeping your own friends and family aware of your work. But remember that they haven't seen the work that your online friends and their friends haven't seen your work. So this is really actually most beneficial, Rodney, to everyone if you're from different parts of the world and have completely different customer lists, so that you're each multiplying your list of buyers several times over.
Wow.
Even if you or the other artists you're inviting don't have a formal email program set up, you can each just send to your friends and family notifications, and you'll always have a fresh new audience who never have seen your work otherwise. Now, this is actually a second tip, but I'm going to put it in with the first one. Another way to host a virtual open house is to ask your friends and those on your mailing list if they would like to host a virtual party for you. And what this means is you supply the host with e-invitations to email to their friends, inviting them to a show or sale of your work online on a specific date or a specific weekend or week. And an incentive for your friends to host or show your work would be that for any pieces their friends purchase during that time, you offer the host a credit, say 10% towards purchases, their own purchases of your work. For example, your host's guests purchase $2,000 of work during your virtual party. You give the host a $200 credit to spend on your work, on your own site.
Oh, wow.
And you can, yeah, there's just lots of little creative things you can do that people don't think about. You can also do a cooperative effort, which is similar to a virtual open house, but rather than gather together to set up a cooperative site, you can invite one artist at a time to be interviewed and feature them on your blog. So ideally, this is a reciprocal effort. You can do this in a couple of ways. It can be something you do for one another without any compensation, just linking to their site, or you can each actually sell the other's work on your site for a period of time, say a week, and you each take a percentage of the sales from their site. So that can kind of be an ongoing thing you do cooperatively with lots of different, both of those, with lots of different creative entrepreneurs who do different types of art. And again, I'm going to stress that it's a wonderful thing if you can connect with people all over the world, because you have such different audiences. And I know, Rodney, you and I have clients and friends in, you know, on many continents. Probably a lot of people on this call are on different continents.
Yeah. I mean, I know you have 10 more tips to go, and I want you to move right into it, but with the first two you've given already, the first thing that came to my mind is that the idea that the only way you can show is in a gallery is so not true, which I knew that already.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yep,
wonderful.
You and I have talked about that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
So much beyond that.
Oh, I love it. Cooperatives, so virtual, mm-hmm. virtual parties, home parties.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was cooperative, so moving on to number three. What's number three?
Okay. Actually, I'm going to call it number two. Demo your techniques and tricks. So if you have an unusual technique for making your item, it's likely that other people are going to want to know something about how you do it. And this can take many forms. It can be entertainment for people who would never try to do the same themselves, people who aren't even artists, or you can present an actual how-to experiential class to other artists. Especially special interest groups love to have someone demonstrate how they do a particular craft. A lot of artists are a little bit leery about sharing their techniques, which is kind of funny because they have a fear of being copied. But, you know, you don't really have to worry about that because the people who would exploit your work are not the ones that would be your students or take a demo. The copiers are those who would buy your work and take it over to China to be mass produced. So when you do it, be generous when you do a demo and don't worry about that. do make sure and have someone video record whatever you do when you do a demo, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. And you don't have to give away any trade secrets, but most people are going to they'll purchase your finished work rather than try to create it themselves, even if you do show them how you do it. So in addition to your finished work, when you do a demo, you can also sell tools of the trade. For example, a few years ago, I was at a luncheon where a woman did a demo of the Japanese braiding art kumihimo. And even though I'm not a fiber artist, I was just intrigued and ended up purchasing several of the little bobbin disc things and cords because she sold materials too. So I purchased them as gifts to give to friends who were fiber artists. And the woman doing the demo sold a ton of supplies and a lot of her finished work as well. Another example would be an artist I used to represent who did an exquisite form of batik that rather than on, you know, the traditional batik that's done in Indonesia and so forth, that's wax and wax-resist and dyes on fabric. Julie did a tempera and India ink method. And so many people wanted to learn about it, other artists, so she set up classes. And honestly, she sold so much of her finished work because people enjoyed it, the demo, but they knew they couldn't do anything, you know, similar to what she did. So, you know, always, always be generous with your demos and teaching. There are all kinds of places that will welcome you to do demos and classes. If you design, for example, you do fiber, just come up with a simple project that incorporates, here's a good idea, in something that incorporates beads. Say you do beadwork. Do something that incorporates beads and then connect with a bead shop and offer to do a demo or a paid class. And if the bead shop doesn't sell fiber, if you're combining it with fiber, ask if you can bring some to sell and offer to give the shop a percentage of it. And you can do the reverse if you're a jewelry artist, approach a yarn shop and offer to give demos on incorporating beads into your work. And if the yarn shop doesn't sell beads, they'll welcome your offer to show their customers what to do with their products. So, it, again, it's a reciprocal thing. You know, it's all about, just like you and I are doing, Robbie, we're sharing our expertise with each other's lists, right?
That's it. That's it. And I'd love to add on to that for a second. You know, now because, you know, things have gotten, become, you know, precarious, you know, with the economy and things like that, you know, businesses, you know, especially brick-and-mortar businesses in particular, this is a wonderful opportunity, and I really want people to hear this. Is that, you know, they're actively looking for ways to bring people into their store.
Yes.
Into their business. And if you have something that you can do, that you can offer, that can be a draw to bring them in, you know, you'd be crazy not to explore that, to see what, I mean, I hate to say it like that, but I mean, it's really the way I feel about it. Not to explore that, because you have a space you don't have to rent. You don't have to come and turn the lights on and turn them off and stay there all day and wait on the customers and clean up. You just come in with your thing that you do, spend what I think 2, maybe 3 hours, and whether you're paid for your time that you're there or not in terms of the store compensating you or it's a paid class, you still get a chance to, you know, get that community involvement going on with what you're doing. And, of course, people are going to want to buy your book, or they're going to want to buy your supply kits, is what Terry is suggesting. And if the store can make a cut on that, it's a boon to them to promote you. So now you get free promotion.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's also just bringing them traffic. And actually, a number of the tips And I may just skip over a minute to a few of those because a number of the tips, that's really what they're all about. For example, restaurants and wineries. If you make wall art, independent restaurants and wineries are often willing and thrilled to display your work and sell it for you. And they may want to do it just to have your art up on their walls. But they also, if you're willing, you think about it, if you were showing in a gallery, you'd be doing a 50-50 split. They're thrilled to make an extra 50% of whatever. You've got, you know, your work up on the wall for $600. They'd love to make an extra $300 just from customers that happen to be sitting under the painting. Same thing with people who make tabletop art, like little hand-painted salt and pepper shakers or those little ceramic dishes that people dip the olive oil in. You know, restaurant owners and wineries, they're thrilled to do co-ops with you. Another thing is doing barbershops and salons. A great place that you're bringing them traffic. They are an upscale barbershop or salon can be a gold mine anytime, but especially right before Valentine's Day or Mother's Day. You have a captive audience, particularly men. No offense to the men on the call, but men buy more around other men, and they are, you know, they know they need to bring something home to the women in their lives, to their girlfriends, wives, mothers. So you've got a captive audience, and they love it because you're bringing in traffic for them. And a lot of the tips that I'm giving you, and I did jump ahead to a few to kind of tie that in and let you know that, yes, what you're saying, Rodney, is absolutely true. It's a win-win. Now remember on that topic that if you make things for men, set up in a place that women hang out also, like a salon. Great to be in a barbershop and hit the men, but also set up in a place like a salon or spa, because honestly, mostly women are the ones who buy men's items. They're the buyers. You might even want to make your packaging more appealing. For example, I think there's a company that does men's underwear. They know that most men's underwear their wives buy. So they make packaging in like baby blues and browns that are really appealing to women. So, yeah, we could go on that topic.
Yeah.
So let me jump back, and the next thing I would like to just very briefly touch on is make and take parties, and this works great for jewelry, but you can also do that. I recommend it to a client who makes marbled paper for journals, and another who does hand painted silk scarves. And the one who makes paper journals actually did kind of a cooperative effort with someone who does bookbinding. So you can really be creative. And you can do the initial gathering in your own home, or you can ask a friend to host it for you. You bring the supplies for, again, a simple project, and everyone gets to make their own and bring it home. And you make money and grow your business very similar to the way that Tupperware or Mary Kay reps grow their business by having friends or family host parties. So, for example, I did this several years ago with jewelry. I had friends who lived in the wine country and had many friends who were winery owners. And they gave, I gave the host 10% of the total volume of the sales from her party towards merchandise. I also offered all of the attendees, if they wanted to host a party, because they're going to ideally have a separate group of friends, so it's a whole new audience, and I offered them the incentive, if they wanted to host a party of my work, that they would get 10% of the sale from their party. So very similar to, you know, I think of Mary Kay, and I think now there are those basket parties and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely want to bring along and display some of your complimentary finished pieces, because I guarantee they will sell. Because most of the attendees know that while they can make and take their thing home, they're never going to do exactly, you know, the more complicated things that you do. And again, of course, offer tools and material for sale.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to skip on it. Go to the next tip, which is selling kits. At the demos and make and take parties, it's a great idea to sell complete kits of supplies and instructions, because that'll increase your revenue tremendously. And you can also make up kits with supplies and tools and instructions and even how-to videos. Again, when I said do demos and have someone videotape them, that's why. Because you can sell those supplies and tips and instruction videos on your website, and you can also sell them if you display at craft fairs. So even if you make paper art like collage cards, you can implement any of these sales tactics. Say you're a rubber stamper or a mixed media artist. You can do demos, parties, and kits with stamps and ink and paper. A good example of that would be if you're a scrapbooker. I know a lot of people scrapbook as a hobby, but it can actually be a really lucrative business. You could invite new moms, new brides, moms of recent to soon be grads, together for a demo and a scrapbooking party. So they bring their photos and their clippings and their memorabilia, and you bring and sell the scrapbooking supplies. There's a woman, Rodney, you know my area is a really beautiful area, and there's a woman who is an independent rep for one of the big scrapbooking paper supply companies, and she actually rents an oceanfront home and has these, they call them croppers, I guess, scrapbookers, has retreats that are cropping weekends where everybody brings their memorabilia, and she, you know, has a retreat weekend where she sells them all the tools and supplies and brings in a massage therapist, and they just have a ball, and she makes money. Or you can also offer to do custom work. For example, my brother-in-law, my nephew Max is a senior in high school and a star athlete and honors student. And so my brother-in-law has been collecting photographs and newspaper articles all through Max's high school career. And he happened to discover that his secretary is does beautiful scrapbooking and memory albums. So he hired her to put all of that together and do a beautiful graduation gift for Max. And I really wanted to say to her, hey, why are you being his secretary when you could be making a living doing this? But I thought he might tell me, so I didn't. But, yeah, so, you know, think in terms of many dimensions when you're doing whatever your creative thing is. Think about the supplies. Think about custom work. Think about all the different ways you can do it. We were talking about about going into places that it can be beneficial for them to sell your work. Here's one that totally surprised me, and that is an office building or a hospital that they would not only allow but appreciate someone to come in and set up displays of their handmade items. You know, again, particularly a day or so before a holiday like Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, couple days before Christmas. And they usually don't even want a percentage, which just blows me away. Basically, what you do is ask the human resources person at a large office building or hospital if you can set up your wares for their employees, either in their lobby or their break room. And remind them that it's to their benefit, because if the staff can shop on their lunch hour, they ideally won't be surfing the web during the workday, and they won't have to take off work early to shop on the way home. So, you know, if you, because they usually don't want any percentage, if you feel good about it or you feel like you want to give yourself some additional leverage to get in the door, offer to donate to, you know, a percentage of your sales to a cause of their choosing. And, you know, Rodney, this just totally amazed me. I have clients that I've made the suggestion to who've come back and told me that they have made more in one lunch hour or one day at a busy office building or hospital than they have all month on their Etsy site or than they did at a whole weekend-long expensive craft that, you know, the large craft fairs with tremendous booth fees. So, you know, don't overlook the obvious.
We'll see, that's it. That's what you're talking about, really, in a nutshell. And what you're saying here is that most of what we are looking for is really, I would say, within 10 miles of our home, pretty much wherever we live. You know, there's opportunities. I heard someone say years ago is that, you know, if you're looking for your next income opportunity, get in your car and drive around for 10 minutes. And when you look at a place, think of how what you do could fit in that place. In
absolutely.
One way or another.
And look in places that are not, for example, if you're an artist, look in places besides art galleries. You know, most artists don't think of going to a restaurant or winery. Yeah, absolutely. Think outside of the norm, and that's a great idea. Go take a walk if you live in a little village. Excuse me. So,
so how many are we up to now, Terry?
You know, we've skipped around, but I'm going to say a word about 8.
Okay.
Real quick, open houses and artist reception. Ask someone you know with influential friends, again, somebody who maybe has is a patron of the arts or someone who is high-level corporate. Ask someone you know to host an artist reception for you. And, again, we're going back to the collaborating. Try to team up with a caterer maybe who's just starting to grow their business or and they'll be thrilled to do complimentary hors d'oeuvres just to get exposure. Same thing with a newer boutique winery that's trying to get their name out. They'll be thrilled to jump at the chance to do a tasting. So always think about how you can collaborate and help each other grow your businesses. Okay. Tip number, I think this is probably, I don't know, 10. I'm gonna end up giving you 20 or so. Sell at local farmers markets. Local farmers markets often allow vendors to sell crafts as well as things like handmade body care items and, you know, the usual edible items. If you live in an area like you do and I do, Rodney, if you live in an area that has year-round farmers markets, you can make a living doing this circuit. I know of several craftspeople who go around to different farmers markets every day of the week, year-round, selling handcrafted soaps and lotions and candles and bread, and they make a really nice living. And another idea to sell those types of items, even if there are no outdoor markets where you live, is to approach independent health food stores and ask if you can set up a tasting or testing, or if your product sells well, they'll possibly agree to carry your product. And think beyond the little local places, Rodney, just like you did in a chain of coffee shops.
Right.
You know, don't be afraid to walk into your local Whole Foods or Barnes & Noble. I have seen local photography at places like that.
Yeah, what Terry is speaking of is that I actually showed my photography when I first started my business years ago at a Coffee Bean, which is a huge coffee chain like Starbucks in Southern California. So,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's important to price your work so that there's room to give a percentage to the establishment. So I don't know, most people on the call probably don't know the term keystone, but it basically means double the price. So if you do sell it outright retail at one of those establishments, you want to double what you would need wholesale so that there's room to give them their percentage.
Yes.
Okay. How are we on time? We're rolling along. Okay.
Yeah, let's see. I think we may have, honestly, about another 10 minutes.
Okay, and then I'll be glad to open up for questions if you'd like.
Yeah, we won't have time for questions, unfortunately, but let's just keep moving through. Yeah,
I love to give content, so that's great.
Well, I appreciate it. It's wonderful that I'm taking copious notes, so
great.
Love it.
Great. So trunk shows and fashion shows. Find an independent boutique. Again, here we are talking about places that it's beneficial to them as well as you. Find an independent boutique that has merchandise that's complementary to what you create and offer to set up a one-day trunk show. And shop owners just absolutely love to have events like trunk shows because it generates buzz for them and it brings in new foot traffic to their shop. For example, if it's a gourmet cook shop, they'd welcome your special sauces or small tabletop pieces, like we were talking about the little ceramic dipping trays, or say you do hand-painted salt and pepper shakers, or you make handmade jellies. If it's a gift shop that doesn't carry stationery, it would be a perfect place to hold a trunk show of your handmade cards. Find a dress boutique or apparel shop that doesn't sell accessories, and they'll gladly host a trunk show for you of your handcrafted jewelry or handmade purses or scarves. And if you go this route, go in beforehand and check out, people don't think of this, but it's a great tip, check out the colors and the styles that the shop's featuring, so that you can design a line for the trunk show around the line of accessories around what complements their inventory. If you see a customer coming in and trying on one of the shop's sweaters, for example, you can walk over with one of your accessories, scarf, jewelry, whatever, and show them how well they go together. And the shop will appreciate the fact that if someone's looking at your jewelry, you can run over and pick up a sweater that it looks great with, for example. So, you know, again, it's all about cooperating compliments, isn't it?
Yep. That's a great idea. I love that one, Terry. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's all about thinking, like you say, walk around and think about how can this place benefit and how can I benefit from being here.
That's it.
Another one is fashion shows. I love this. And this I found by accident. One of my employees was modeling clothes for a community fashion show, and I asked if she wanted to borrow some of my jewelry for the show. And she talked to the sponsors, and they were thrilled to have us accessorize not just her but all the models. So we did not sell items at the event, but the announcer, the MC, did a great job of describing the pieces. And, of course, I had cards on all the lunch tables. And from that one event, I would say I gained 50 to 60 loyal repeat customers, which –
wow.
You know, ended up in several thousand dollars of revenue specifically from people who attended that show. So, you know, who would think, right?
Right. Well, that's just it. That's just it. Most of us don't think that way. So, it's brilliant. And it's, like I said, it's right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, another place people don't think about are independent active retirement communities. Now, I don't mean nursing homes, but I mean places where active retirees live so that they're able people who love to learn new crafts and are still shoppers, and they're always looking for entertainment. So if you paint, offer to do a demo and have small mounted prints on hand to sell. And while I normally do not recommend framing a lot of your work, remember that some of these people drive, but a lot of them don't get around real well. So that they're fine at walking through your show, but they're probably not up to going out and mounting and framing. So do, in those cases, bring either, you know, for example, canvases that are wrapped already, something that's hangable so that they don't have to do anything. You'll make lots more sales. Also mention that you do custom work, and you may just be able to pick up a couple of commissions. Another thing is always, again, remember, because these are people who are active, if you do something like demonstrate jewelry there, sell your jewelry, but by all means, have kits available because you'll sell some of those too. And most independent retired communities will also let you set up displays of useful things. Think about quilted bags with Velcro that they can hang over their walkers, or eyeglass holders, you know, things that they will buy for themselves. And keep in mind that most of them have downsized, so they don't want to collect a lot of big stuff. So scale your pieces down. If you do wall art, make them tiny. If you do tabletop stuff, you know, just keep in mind who this person is that's your buyer. Another great place that artists don't think about are independent pet boutiques. If you have an indie pet boutique in your area, that's a great place to do a demo or a show of your work. If you do pet portraits or make handmade doggy sweaters or artful collar tags, you'll get commissions if you make paintings or photographs of animals. And my vet's office, for example, she has a pet rescue in her vet's office as well. And she has gorgeous photographs hanging on the walls. I think I shared this with you, Rodney. It's an artist called Pet Photographers. Instead of photographers, D-O-G, and I just love that. She's got a number of other handmade mosaics and things like that on her walls. And I asked her, do these people, do you sell them or were they just gifts? And she said both. So, you know, think about a vet office, an independent pet boutique, offer to give a percentage of your sales to a pet rescue or even to the business. You can also go to the larger, chains and approach them when they're having like adoption days, for example, and offer to sell your pieces there and give a percentage to the adoption cause. And, again, they benefit and you benefit. And a great example of that is I have a friend who is a metalsmith, jewelry artist, and she set up on site one day. She set up a dog tag stamping using aluminum tags on black cord with a little paw print stamp and alphabet stamp and glue gun with crystals. She sold these little tags for $5 a piece. She brought in $2,000 in an afternoon. She gave a percentage of that to the, and they didn't want much, but she wanted to donate quite a bit to the pet rescue. The supplies for each piece were 19 cents, and she sold them for $5 a piece. So there's plenty of profit to share, whether you split 50-50 or you give them a piece or however it works. In one day, that's a pretty nice profit.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, Terry, I mean, you've given us so much, and it's just my head's like almost like exploding. I mean, it's amazing, and these ideas are just brilliant. And what I love about all of it, the cornerstone of everything that you've shared with us so far, and unfortunately we're really at the end of our time. I want to do tell people how to get more from you. But it's really about very grassroots around your neighborhood, around your area kinds of opportunities. I think, again, with social media, and not social media, but a lot of the internet marketing-related things is that we spend a great deal of time in interjecting ourselves into an already overcrowded space. And so it becomes much more difficult to get any kind of attention and traction going because we're already in an overcrowded space. And the grassroots tips that you are, all of them that you've suggested to us, has been about getting one out of your house, getting in your car or wherever, however motor transportation you use, getting in front of real live people that you can talk to, it's going back to the way it was before. And I'm not saying the internet's not beneficial or useful, but I think of it more as a follow-up tool, not as your main way of generating in the resources that you need. And I think it's applicable to any kind of business, not just art and crafts related services. It's all of it. It's touching people, talking to people, and getting them to know you. You know, what Terry has done here is nothing short of just really, if you picked up only one or two things that she said that you can take action on, and I would even go so far as to say, if you can get nothing from what she said, go get in the car and drive around your area. And as you look at businesses, look at them with a different set of eyes. And ask yourself this question, how is what I do could be a benefit to that business?
Absolutely.
And use it as your prevailing thought. You don't have to get an answer right then in that moment, but your mind, once you give your mind a question that it can work on, it'll give you an answer. I know for a fact that what Terry is saying works because I've done it, and unfortunately I don't have time to go into the things that I've done, but I've done a lot of the things that Terry has suggested here, so I know what she's saying, it works. What I would love to have everyone do is to go over to the getpaidforyourcreativity.com/gifts page. There's also a link if you're on the webcast where there's a button that says access bonuses, and you'll see, scroll down, you'll see Terry's photograph there, and she has graciously offered a couple of her bonus items, which is, one, two special reports. One is The Myth of the Starving Artist. I love that title. And the second one is 13 easy low-cost or no-cost tips to turn your crafts into cash now. Love those titles. When you visit her page, you'll see a link there to visit her website. You can register for those right away. And, Terry, I do believe that you do also offer some private consultations as well. Would you prefer them just email you for that, or would you have them?
They can do that at terry@inspiredlivelihood.com, or they can also, on the inspiredlivelihood.com site, go to Need My Guidance. And Rodney, I'm going to offer one other just bonus for your, specifically for your audience, which is one secret tool that'll bring in consistent income every month, month after month. It's so obvious, but people don't think of it. So, I want to offer that to your group too. And that is on the link page as well, I believe. And yes, I absolutely do. If people need help implementing any of these or more of the tips that I have, and I have a head full of many more, I do work with people privately.
I see it here. So everything you need is on that page. So with that said, we're going to be bringing Natalie Ekobo on in about 5 minutes. So I will unfortunately have to end our session. But again, Terry, thank you. You know, again, I wanted to bring all of these wonderful people together because I know each of them has a piece of the puzzle that you need to take your gifts, your talents, and turn it into income. And Terry has shared so many, more than we could even go into in our time together. And it just means that we'll have to do this again at some other time soon. So,
absolutely. And Rodney, thank you. I'm honored to be part of this amazing lineup of brilliant entrepreneurs. I'm just really happy and honored to be part of that. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're most welcome. You're most welcome. So everyone, stick around with us. I'm going to disconnect myself for just a minute and then and jump back on so we can bring on Natalie. And Terry, thank you again. And everyone, thank you for sticking in with us. It's been a great, powerful day. And we're going to have another great session following up again on the conversation of bringing in money. Today is how to make that money day and how to keep it. So this is going to be a really fun conversation. And then at 4 o'clock today, we're going to take an hour break after Natalie's session, and we're going to talk about visioning and creating smart goals that help you get blank done. We'll talk about that later. So I will see you all in about 3 minutes. Thank you, Terry. Everyone, stick around. We'll see you in a little bit.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Rodney.